If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. E-listening on Wednesday, we have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Today, our seminar topic is Overcoming Confusion and Inconsistency in Fulfilling the Four Goals and Stages of Life. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call yourself forward in integrative awareness with your soul and spirit. Bring them down as an energy of pure awareness into the mind and flood the mind with that divine awareness. Bring it down all the way through the body until your whole physical form is filled with divine light and awareness. Take another deep breath and do that very quickly. Integrate, infuse, illumine. Know that the Atma, the spirit, connects with little tendrils of pure electrical light into every cell. Every cell has a photon, which is literally you as divine spirit occupying every cell of your body. And likewise, you illumine a cell within the body of God, so that you're intrinsically part of that energy field of omnipresence and omnipotence and all-knowingness of the Supreme Creator. That which is beyond description, beyond name, beyond form, beyond religious doctrine, beyond anything that we could conceive of. For the only way we can realize that self that we are is by finding that point of immortal light deep within our own consciousness. And that unitive particle is called the soul, or spirit, or the Atma, or the I Am Presence. But whatever you call it, you need to bypass the conditioning of the mind and find for yourself that place in which you exist eternally. And that is a great adventure. It is a great romance and a great mystery until you've gone into it, but it keeps unfolding itself. And it's the one goal that perhaps we never quite fully attain, at least while we have a human mind that pretty much calls the shots when we're down here in a human, seeming human embodiment. Why? Well, because when you move fully into that light that you are, all of this phenomenal universe dissolves in pure white light. And you cannot function here in that state, can you? Well, maybe you'd be in India and you'd sit like Ananda Moima, the great avatar of the Divine Mother. But she couldn't function in the physical world. Sri Ramakrishna went to that stage. And the Divine Mother appeared to him and said, I want you to stay in the world and teach, not to merge with me. I want you to taste the sweetness, but not merge into the sweetness. And so she gave him that experience of oneness and union of the divine, but then kept him just short of that full realization, which was difficult for him to maintain, because at the slightest mention of anything that would be divine, holy, uplifting, beautiful, he would immediately go into nirvikalpa samadhi. Nirvikalpa samadhi is where the mind transcends every form of otherness and is in God and of God. So some of you, maybe one or two, may have reached that stage where you are being purposely kept just this side of full atmic realization so that you can continue to work here a little longer, be of service a little longer, bring the light to people. That's why we're here. You know, the great Vivekananda, who took on the work after his guru, Sri Ramakrishna, left the body. Ramakrishna used to pray, O Divine Mother, please keep the Maya tight around Vivekananda. Actually, he was called Narendra. He only took the name Vivekananda after the passing of Ramakrishna. But Ramakrishna prayed like that. Keep the Maya close and thick around Vivekananda. Why? Because before Ramakrishna incarnated, he appeared as a child and went and sat on the lap of a great rishi, absorbed in meditation. That's upon the inner plane. And the rishi opened his eyes and noted this radiant, divine child that was sitting on his lap. And Ramakrishna in child form said, I want you to come with me to earth and help me in my mission. To which Ramakrishna readily agreed. So by the time Ramakrishna took incarnation, he had been indoctrinated into an atheistic type of belief and was completely tightly veiled of any remembrance whatsoever of his rishi status. It's important to remember. Sometimes we have a great, great, great attainment upon the inner planes, but we are kept veiled. We don't remember. So anyway, he came to Ramakrishna, kind of on a lark, out of curiosity, but so veiled that when Ramakrishna told him only God exists, after he left the interview with Ramakrishna, he was laughing to his friend. He said, did you ever hear anything so ridiculous in your life? God is in this table, God is in this chair, God is in you, God is in me, God is in everyone. What utter nonsense. So Ramakrishna overheard him talking and came out and touched Vivekananda and immediately sent him into that state of nirvikalpa samadhi. And he stayed in that state for 3 or 4 days. He couldn't eat, he couldn't function. He couldn't do anything. Everything he saw was God. And so, after 3 days, it wore off. And again the Maya came, but just enough that he didn't remember who he was, but lessened so that he could recognize that Ramakrishna was indeed his guru. So like that, and he didn't live very long. He passed out of the body at age 39. But Ramakrishna knew that if he had remembered who he was, he would drop the body immediately. I remember a great woman devotee of Sai Baba who was one of my dearest friends. And she complained to me one day. She said, you know, I've had many interviews with Sai Baba. I brought my family there. But he hardly ever looks at me, and he won't let me touch his feet. And I said, oh, beloved, the reason why he won't let you touch his feet is because the minute you do, you will merge in him. And you have three children. You have a husband. You're a young wife and mother. You must fulfill your dharma. And you can't if you drop your body. So, like that, sometimes it's that way with us. You cannot really gauge who you are or what you are. Please remember that. Just know that you are one and indistinguishable from God forever and ever. And enjoy the role that God has allotted you, because it's just that, one of many. But every single one of you has been born at the time when we are to be the ones that implement and facilitate the new forms and the new level of consciousness that is to replace the old, obsolete ways we have been living on this planet and the disconnect that we have with nature and one another. We are here to address that, however we do. We are here to address that. That's our job assignment, let's say. Every one of us. And we're a vast intergalactic team that came specifically equipped to do that. Now, we don't have to do everything ourselves. We're a team. We're a team that includes the people living, actually on the physical plane with you and me, but also the interplane ashrams, the schools of consciousness that we are part of upon the interplane. The lineages and orders that we belong to. We bring all of our upline in an integration right down to the top of our heads so that we're always connected. We're always connected. We're always in communication. So you have to learn to listen to the silent voice that kind of shows up as a bright idea in your mind. Or a prompting of the conscience. Or something that keeps niggling and nagging in the back of your consciousness that you know you feel you have to do. Act on that. When the impulse arises from within that pushes you, I know when I'm being divinely lived, there's an inner push that bypasses my mind, my objections, my lower self, my ego. All of those levels just get bypassed. And a very resolute energy centers in me, and I just find myself acting. I have felt that every single time Sai Baba has called me to India. I mean, I want to go. I'm, you know, doing what I want to do and involved in stuff, and, you know. And I can't resist. So like that, God lives us. The divine spirit lives in us. And causes us to fulfill that for which we have been called. Rely on it, trust it, know it. So, most of all, if not all problems in life, we've created for ourselves because we've been confused and inconsistent We're confused about who and what we are and what we truly want in life. And thus, we're inconsistent in aligning our thoughts and words and actions in actualizing our goals. So this confusion of identity and not knowing what to do to fulfill our goals in life seems to dog us no matter what age or stage we are in life. And I believe this is the major cause of frustration, depression, anger, and unhappiness in general. So this underlying background of discontent seems to prevail in most minds. And therefore, most find themselves anxious, impatient, stressed out, trying to get from where they are in life to where they want to be. So we all recognize this because we've all experienced being confused and inconsistent at some point in life. And those of us who are life coaches, mentors, teachers, counselors, we deal with people every day coming to us with this issue. So let's take a deep breath. And bring our shoulders down off of our earlobes. Relax. And if that's been you, can you just let it go? Just let it go. Trust that you know enough to do what you need to do. And we're each one of us kind of like a time release capsule, so that we trigger and activate at different points in the timeline. So you can't judge yourself and think you've missed it or you're too late or it's all over for you or whatever, because that's simply not true. There is no way in the world you can fail to fulfill that for which you've come. You're a soul. You as a soul will absolutely pull the rug out of you every time you get off purpose. I mean, watch. Watch how many times you have tried to go a little off target, you know, wander off in the brambles of distraction. How something will intervene, pull the rug out from under your feet. The person will up and leave you. You'll get fired out of the job, whatever. But see that that's part of the soul's purpose, keeping you on purpose, keeping you living consistently with what you have come here to fulfill. Now, most of us, you see, have been educated in making a living, but not in living a life worth living. And that's the major cause for all of the turning off and drugging out in today's culture. I may be speaking to a few of you that have gotten into that condition. But even in that, your awakening and getting yourself out of that is the teaching that you have come to embody for the people that you are interacting with. So that even your errors, as you may judge them to be, are part of the tapestry of light that you are weaving out of your encounters with situations and places of addiction and people who have fallen by the wayside. You're like a walking lifesaver that God is sending into that arena. So you can't even judge and fault yourself for what you thought was falling into the pit. You just don't know. You just have to be as true to yourself in the light that you are, in the situation in which you find yourself, as you can be. And that's enough. So as light workers, we are very concerned about the state of affairs, with what's going on the planet,
with a political debacle, with, you know, with people, with our friends, our family, our loved ones, children that seem to be all over the map. You know, the astrological pressures and the cosmic energies that are bombarding us. Some of us are, you know, flat out trying to integrate these energies. It's the most intense time that's ever been on the planet. And I think this September, and I'm speaking now, we're in September, I think it's the 7th, 2016, that is like a month out of all proportions in terms of what we've got going. Two solar eclipses, all sorts of stuff going on. So if you're feeling very frazzled and laid flat out, if you will, and unable to do much but sleep, don't fault yourself. Last night I fell asleep at 9:30, and I slept all the way through for 10 and a half hours. Was I sleeping? No, nor were you. We were working out of body. You see, our work is 24/7. We never stop. So sometimes during the day you're called out of body because there's some place in the world that your spirit is sent to minister to people. You may have people say that they saw you appear wherever. Yeah, you're bilocating a lot. I found that out the other day. I'm bilocating regularly. So just pay attention and trust that what you're doing and the way you're doing it is meant to be, and there are no coincidences, no accidents, and no happenstance. Everything is divinely guided, and we're here at the time of the greatest avatar that has ever walked the earth, and he said that you are here as part of his mission. Great cosmic avatar that's not even part of the earth's evolution. Satya Sai Baba has come as a gift of grace to this planet. And you're part of his team. Why? Because I'm talking to you about him. You can't hear this unless it's his will. You wouldn't be able to turn on this podcast or radio show or whatever that way that you're listening to it if it were not true of you. So we all need a purpose greater than our little humdrum personal lives and affairs to live for. We have to have that. Otherwise, we get very, very self-focused and introverted in a bad way. And we start to go into the unhappy self. And when you do that, you got to get out of that unhappy self and go look for somebody to make happy, to brighten, to serve. Get out of the personal doldrums. That's letting you know that your energies are backing up and turning in on you and not in a good way. We are meant to radiate and to extend the love of God, the light of God, the wisdom of God, the compassion of God. That's our job assignment. So we do our best, but sometimes due to our confusion and inconsistency, we can often feel frustrated, and then we begin to doubt our own ability to make a difference. So I want you to drop that doubt. Self-doubt is the worst devil you will ever be confronted with. And so you need to cast it out. Don't allow it any room whatsoever in your mind. Fill yourself so much with the words of truth that there's simply no room for such a bodacious lie as self-doubt to creep in. So I want to look at the four goals of human life. and the four stages of life. So that the body, the mind, and the spirit operate as one unit, consistent with, let's call it, the right behavior or action or deportment in these various stages of light. Now, to understand the unity of body, mind, and spirit, or Atma, you need to realize the fundamental truth. The body, though it's holographic in nature and a false appearance, is apparent. It seems like it's real. You can see it. The Atma, on the other hand, that is the eternal reality, is subtle. You can't see it. You can see evidence of it expressing through a human body because it expresses as love, truth, wisdom, right action, so forth. But between the body and the Atma, the connecting link that makes a person a, quote, human, is the mind. Now, the mind has two levels, basically. You'll have the ego mind, which is the form that separation and fear took. That's the illusion or the false self. And then you have the buddhi, or the higher intelligence or intellect, whose job it is to discern and discriminate between the real and the unreal. That's the part of the mind that you use to pierce through the illusion of the impermanent into that place of permanency that we spoke of as that point of light within us. Now, if the Atma or spirit is ignored, one is reduced to the level of a beast. And you see a lot of people that live at that bestial level. Now, when the body and the Atma both are ignored, and the mind alone is active, the human ego state is evident. And we see a lot of that behavior in the world as well. So, when the body and mind are transcended, and Atma alone is expressed, then you have divinity. Then man has become God. As the saying goes, God with ego is man. Man without ego is God. So it's just that little ego mind that has a belief and an attitude that it's separate and keeps running the fear and the separation agendas. Once that is dissolved in awareness, the divine is simply present. So the key to experiencing life, along with fulfilling your duties in life, enjoying the pleasures and the things of life, is to enjoy them and participate, but without attachment. This is learning to act as a divine instrument without receiving any fruit therefrom. It's like the tree. The tree does not eat its own fruit. It does not benefit from its own shade. We are to use that example and be like the tree. Sai Baba said an interesting thing. He said that he can only give. He is not able to receive. He can only give. We were in an interview with him, and he waved his arm around the room. There was a small group of us, and he said, "You are all avatars." He said, "I am a server. You see these hands? They only give, give, give. Swami," which is what he calls himself, "Swami can give you anything that you want." And then sometimes he'll turn when he says things like that and ask you what you want. I mean, try to speak when he asks you that question. But anyway, just saying. And so it's difficult because you see the personal self, the ego self, always wants to have a payback. It always gives with an eye to receive or to create an outcome or to pursue a particular objective. But, you know, we have to learn to become like Krishna. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita said, having no need to act, I act for the benefit of all sentient beings. So that's our model. We are to act for the benefit of all of humanity, but not for personal gain or personal self-promotion or personal self-aggrandizement. Those are all manifestations of the false self. We have to give all and serve all and be nothing. So, the four objectives or goals of human life are called in Sanskrit. Some of you Vedic students and yogic students will recognize the term. They're called the four purushartas, which means the objectives of life, which are dharma, or right action, kama, or the lawful and proper fulfillment of desires, artha, or the accumulation of the wherewithal to support oneself and make one's livelihood, and moksha, liberation. And they're called dharma, kama, artha, and moksha. Now, dharma, or right action, is often translated as duty. You have to do your duty. But really speaking, dharma is the behavior that emanates from you when you're rightly aligned with your spirit. It just is what happens when you have that directive. So it's the action prompted by awakened awareness. But its real purpose is that our actions should lead to self-realization. And so our real dharma is to constantly discern what is right and what is not, and what is permanent and what is transient. The next is kama. Kama is often translated as fulfilling sensual desires, but Sai Baba has taught that that is impossible. Desires are like the ten heads of the devil Ravana. You'd sever one and 10 more grow in its place. So there's no end to desires. So he said that the right practice of kama is to channel all of your desires to realizing God, to experiencing the divine presence. So it's not to do with fulfilling mundane and sensual desires, certainly not for you and me, because we're here for a higher purpose. But you'll see that within the masses of humanity, the proper fulfillment of kama or desire would be within the marriage arrangement, where there is the proper channeling of, for example, the sexual desire, the proper channeling of the desire to have the things that will improve the life of your loved ones and family. That would be the human, more of the human expression. But for those of us who are the bearers of light, we are to channel our desires to that which is eternal and Godward, and to the fulfilling of the ultimate desire behind all desire, which is longing for divine merger and union. So when love expresses in thought and action, that is when you express and experience peace or shanti. So pay attention to bringing love into your thoughts, into your feelings, into your actions, so that you can experience that peace or shanti. So the third is artha, or wealth, or right acquisition. Now, generally, it's translated as acquiring wealth and property, but that we know is not lasting. The real wealth we are to acquire is the wisdom related to the divine. So, your greatest wealth is who and what you are forever and the wisdom that arises from that integration with that higher wisdom, that higher awareness. You're a treasure trove of wisdom. And that is your greatest wealth. And that is something that's permanent. You can never lose it. And so, if you are blessed with material wealth, it's your dharma to use, Sai Baba said, 50% of your income to promote the works of light. Interesting, huh? We have a system of tithing 10%, but Baba said we should give 50% of our income to promoting the welfare and well-being of others, of humanity. Tough teacher, you know. He doesn't cut you any slack. So with love, nonviolence or ahimsa becomes your natural way of living. You can't be violent and willfully harm any life form when you have truly become the love of your true self. Now, the fourth goal of life is moksha, or translated as liberation from the need to take further rebirth in this realm of reincarnation and karma. But the real moksha comes from the disillusion and destruction of the ego mind, which becomes dissolved in the light of self-realization. Most people think, at least the religious people think, of liberation as salvation and being able to reach heaven. But not in this case, because heaven, there are many heavens, many hells, many purgatorial worlds. They're all states of consciousness that we create for ourselves. They're not given by God. They're created by us, by what we think and believe and focus on in our behavior. But they're all temporary. Every one of them is temporary. Most people, when they die with a lot of desires, they go to what is called Devakan. And Devakan is the realm where you experience the pleasures that you have longed to experience. And it's a temporary heaven. But after your merit or your good karma has been expiated, then you have to be born again in another human body. So that's not real liberation. So the state of divine wholeness and pure existence, awareness and bliss, or Satchitananda, that is true liberation, when you're in that state. And that's a state in which there is nothing lacking. It's a state of pure being and wholeness, with no change or movement. It is Sat, or true existence. So in genuine moksha, or liberation, you won't have any sense of lacking. There's no more incoming or outgoing, neither birth nor death. It is a state beyond name and form, but not a specific place to go. This is so important to realize. It is the attainment of unity with the divine. And you might say it's the soul's graduation from impermanence and seeking, but it doesn't require you to leave your body. You don't attain it by leaving your body. You attain it by self-realizing who you are and what you are forever, here and now in this lifetime. Like I said when we were first starting the seminar, you may have already attained that, and you may be just kept this side of full realization of this until some specific point, maybe when you get in advanced age, maybe when you cross out of the body. It doesn't matter, because the body is just a dream, like a cloud, like a hologram anyway. So whether the hologram is projected into time-space or withdrawn into eternal existence, you see, the body is not the factor here. It's the conscious awareness that's the factor. So when you, excuse me, when you think of love, this is a good way to think of love. Love plus thoughts is satya, or truth. Love plus feelings is shanti, or peace. Love plus action is dharma, right action. Love plus understanding is ahimsa, harmlessness. So you see, in everything, it's love that perfects and completes and makes us whole. And who in the world does not seek love? We yearn for love. We crave love. We must have love. But you see, to experience love, you have to extend it. It's only in the extending of it that you receive the experiencing of it. So if you feel like you want more love in your life, then find someone and give your love to that one. However you do it, maybe a smile, maybe a hug, maybe buy them a cup of coffee, whatever. It can be so simple. But find a way to express your love, and you will immediately feel loved. You'll feel so good. It's like an instant fix for loneliness and unhappiness and feeling unloved. So there are four stages also in our spiritual journey which show us how to make the most of our time and energy. And these are from the teachings of Sai Baba. So the very first stage is to give one half of our time and our mental attention to earning our livelihood. So this would be the time of our youth. And during that period of our life, where half of our time and our mind is focused on earning our living, we're also carrying on our worldly duties and responsibilities and fulfilling our family commitments and responsibilities. So half of our energy is devoted to that. Then one quarter of the time should be used for spiritual studies, and the remaining quarter for contemplation on God. So that's how we are to use the very first stage of our life. When we're young, we're going through getting training and prepared for making a living. We're perhaps getting married and having a family. So that is for that stage. The body must be made to work and to render service to society. That's the proper dharma at that time when you have the vitality and energy and strength of youth. Now, the stage just before that would be called the student phase of life, or the stage of brahmacharya. That means that the student is to be focused on their studies and rendering service and making their parents happy. They're to obey their parents and render them service within the family and to bring them a good name by, you know, being a diligent student. They also should maintain celibacy. Very difficult if you start unleashing your sexual expression when you're a youth. It really messes up your hormones. And, of course, then there's all the other things that can come. Then the next stage is the householder, or the grihastha stage, where you have family responsibilities. And, of course, Sai Baba says when you are single, you have two legs. You get married, you have four legs. You have a son, you have six legs. You have a daughter, you have eight legs. And pretty soon you're like a centipede. So we must fulfill those stages of our life as light workers, but to always prioritize the fulfillment of our responsibilities in the most dharmic way possible, the most truthful, and with the greatest integrity. And then to always allot time for spiritual study and contemplation on God. Then the middle age comes, which is the second stage, as children begin to mature and leave home and create their own lives, where gradually you proceed to the next stage. Now, only one-fourth of the time is devoted to worldly affairs, and one-half the time is devoted to spiritual and scriptural study, and the remaining one-fourth to meditation on God. So that would be appropriate for the middle age stage of life. The third stage in life is the retired stage, or what has been called in Sanskrit vanaprastha. That's the stage when the work and family responsibilities are completed. I mean, enough's enough. There has to be coming a place in your life when it's enough. I've had enough of the world. I've had enough of taking care of kids and all of the other responsibilities. This is my time to focus on really completing myself spiritually. So proceeding to this stage, this next higher stage, one half of the time is devoted to spiritual and scriptural studies, and the other half to meditation. And here, the husband and wife, usually the stage is entered at age 60. Here, the husband and wife may agree to go ahead and live together as brother and sister and proceed with their spiritual realization, or they may go off and proceed with their spiritual realization with the blessings and permission of each other. This is what Srila Prabhupada, who started the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna movement started. At age 60, he came with, I think, 30 rupees in his pocket to New York City, all alone, and didn't know what to do. He went to Central Park, sat down, and started chanting Hare Krishna. Pretty soon, some of the hippies that were hanging out in that area found him, thought he was very curious, really liked what he was doing, although they had no clue what it was, invited him back to their loft, and pretty soon, from that simple, humble beginning, the worldwide Hare Krishna movement was born. And he was simply told by his guru to take the teachings of Krishna to the United States. He was old, he was retired, he had family and children that were grown and elderly, and he had been a chemist by profession. So that's what he did at age 60. Now, the fourth stage is the last stage, and that's called the stage of being a spiritual recluse, or sannyasa. Now, the entire time of the mind should be devoted to God realization, to where you're always immersed in union with God. Now, these, of course, are the ideals according to Sai Baba, but as Westerners, you know, we're kind of messy. We're all over the map when it comes to these four levels. You find women in their 60s getting facelifts and boob lifts and butt lifts and everything else that can be lifted. I mean, some of them just need to lift their whole skin and tie a knot at the top of their head, right? And then they get all painted up and they're wanting to get married, or they're wanting a lover. And that makes for neurotic and psychotic craziness, that you have to take constant pills and have constant counseling sessions with a psychiatrist to try to manage your crazies. And that's because we've just never been taught in our culture the proper way to live our life, the proper stages that we need to fulfill our life so that every area of life is fulfilled. You keep a balance, you keep a perspective. And likewise, you find this dreadful program they're having now on cable television about babies, you know, little toddlers that are dressed up in sexy outfits and taught to wiggle and gyrate all over the stage, and they're all painted and forced into this incredibly superficial body fixated focus, where everything's on the external beauty and making yourself appear as you're not. Such a false presentation to these tiny children for the sake of God knows what. I mean, I suppose the parents make money out of that. Or maybe they fulfill some desire that they never, you know, had fulfilled. But, I mean, look at the way we're living life. I mean, really examine. Is this a life or is this a charade? We have to observe some sort of protocol in how we live our life so that everything is expressed within a proper context at a proper stage. And likewise, when you reach a retired stage, and you just take your attachments that you had to your children, this is going to go ouch for some of you, but you take the attachment you had to your children, and then you transplant it with the same attachment to your grandchildren, to where you're not focusing on realizing God. You're just attached again to another thing that you're supposed to detach from more and more and more, because you're reaching that fourth stage when you're going to have to leave it all behind. And if you're still attached to any material thing, it's going to pull you back. It's going to pull you back to another incarnation. So this is kind of a tough talk, because we have to begin jettisoning the cargo that has kept us earthbound, that has kept us coming again and again to this zoo, this Looney Tune bin, this school of hard knocks. There's got to be an end to your investment in the world and everything having to do with the world. Sai Baba told me, because I'm in that last stage myself of sannyas, to leave the world to me. They're my responsibility. Leave your daughter to me. She's my daughter. She's my responsibility. Because, like so many people, I thought, well, if I'd only done better, you know, would have been, you know, we always run this number. Oh, I could always do more. I could always do better. What is that if it isn't ego? What is that if it isn't just absolute nonsense? Do you think you're doing your life? Do you think you were given this life? No. God gave you this life. God is the intelligence. God is the energy. God is the vitality. God is the mental power. Why do you think, as the body gets older, its ability to move about is curtailed? It becomes less. It becomes harder and harder to move about. The mental capacity, it began gradually, that declines too. Why? Because you're supposed to transcend the body and the mind and the attachments. So even nature is saying, slow down, go within. Use this time that you don't have to work and realize God. Live simply. Get rid of the stuff. Simple life. Divine life. So confusion and inconsistency arise when we attempt to fulfill desires and to undertake unnecessary duties and obligations that are inappropriate to our stage in life. So by attempting to cling to the past and its duties and attachments, we miss the present opportunity for ultimate freedom, which is divine realization. And then we relegate ourselves to earth for another life or lifetimes of mortal existence. So use wisely the time. Pay attention to the stage in life that you are. And all that you do, regardless of what stage you're in, realize that the supreme God force, the Atma, is the doer, the thinker, the listener, the motivator, and the sole occupier of your mind-body complex. Just be like a hollow flute that the breath of the Lord Krishna is blowing his sweet melodies through. Be the song of God. Be the Bhagavad Gita of God. Be the hue. Be the divine living sound current of the Lord. And make beautiful music. Let your whole life radiate a vibrational resonance that is so exquisitely divine that people in your presence will know that God is. You will be the very presence of the Father, Mother, God. And just like Jesus, you will know, as he did, when you have seen me, you have seen the Father. For the Father is in me, and I am in the Father. And by Father, we don't mean a male person. We're speaking about the positive energy. Because to God, all of creation is the Mother. All of creation is feminine. The only male is Purusha, Mahapurusha, which is God. And that's why God is referred to as he. But God has no gender, and neither do you as a spirit, as Atma. We are neither male nor female. We are one and indistinguishable from God. So I hope this has been helpful. It's important to use our life, this life, which has been earned by so much previous merit, by so much grace. You have been given a human body. Use it so that you fill yourself and completely occupy yourself with your divinity. So, let's go out chanting on I Hue, and send it forth as a blessing of peace and love to all sentient beings throughout this world and all worlds. Deep breath. On I Hue. Blessings and grace to each one of you. Namaste.